Dan Jackson, W266DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Despite a request by the victim's family that Marcellus Williams be given a life sentence and a request from the U.S. Supreme Court to stop his Missouri execution, he has been put to death by lethal injection for a 1998 murder. Missouri Net reporter Anthony Morabeth.
Marcellus Williams did not appear to struggle at all.
President Biden approves an emergency declaration for Florida due to Tropical Storm Helene. National Hurricane Center's Jamie Rowe.
The story is what it will become as it moves into the eastern Gulf of Mexico and begins to approach the Florida Peninsula as a major hurricane on Thursday.
The Justice Department slaps Visa with an antitrust lawsuit for allegedly stifling competition in the debit card market. Attorney General Merrick Garland.
It coerces would-be market entrants into unlawful agreements not to compete by threatening high fees if they do not cooperate and promising big payoffs if they do.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Civic Media News, I'm Derek Tritz. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The Wisconsin State Law Library will have a new name. The state's high court and the director of state courts announced it'll be dedicated to Lavinia Goodell. She was Wisconsin's first woman to become a lawyer. In 1874, she overcame barriers to practice law and worked to open the doors to other women. Currently, the library is named after former conservative justice David Prosser. That was a controversial move in 2016, in part because Prosser put his hands on the neck of a fellow female justice and claimed self-defense. He was recommended to be found guilty of ethics violations, but justices recused themselves, so the charges went nowhere. Brett Favre revealed Tuesday that he has been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. The revelation came while Favre was testifying in front of Congress over a controversy that started in 2020, where he was accused of misusing funds intended to help low-income families. And that's what you need to know. I'm Derek Tritz, and this is Civic Media News.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
It is National Monte Cristo Day. It's kind of one of those sandwiches. It's like bell bottoms. You just haven't heard about it in like 40 years. But it got me thinking, what's a sandwich that's totally overrated? I'm going to go first. The Philly cheesesteak.
Really?
Yeah. And I'll tell you why. Because I'm spoiled. Because in Wisconsin, we have the brat packed with tons more taste than a Philly cheesesteak.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK, Waukesha's home for the Todd Allball Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is The Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today in Chicago for the big convention, the Democratic National Convention. Quite a trip, 711 miles overnight through Columbus for a quick pickup, but a straight shot. As one of my Twitter followers said, you going to do that straight through? Of course. How else would a truck driver do that other than get and go? And we got here, I'm not going to say how quickly, Illinois law enforcement. But hey, we're here and we're going to spend the next couple of days talking with politicians, talking with labor leaders, talking with activists about the direction, the future, the hope, the joy that hopefully this convention will continue to bring us. And then ultimately in November, what conventions are for? They're to nominate your nominee. They're to put them up on a pedestal. They're to highlight the good things that they're going to do and ultimately get them elected so that we can move on policy. They're going to make people's lives better. Now, coming out of this convention, what's Kamala Harris and Tim Walz going to have to do? They're going to have to be the people that continue the energy. Lots of energy. Sustain the momentum. Keep it going. Pretty sizable bumps. If you've seen the news lately, five of the seven battleground states, Kamala Harris has now come from behind and leading in. I've seen others that are saying six out of seven battle states. All arrows, whether you believe polls or not, all arrows are pointing in the direction of momentum and a Harris-Walz victory in November. But this has got to be more than just about polling. This has got to be about policy. And ultimately, what's going to come out of this convention, hopefully, will be the discussion of what kind of a country do we want to have? Where do we want to go? Ultimately, she's got to make herself the change candidate. Going to say, look, we're going to pick up the mantle that Biden has created. The transformational changes that have happened during our tenure as Vice President and President Biden. And we're going to move this forward in a way that's going to make lives better. Ultimately, isn't that what politics comes down to? It's how are we going to make lives better? How are we going to move forward and for the country in ways that are, quite frankly, going to leave this country a better place for our children and grandchildren. So, you know, be the change candidate, sustain this incredible momentum. But, you know, look, you've got a doofus on the other side who can't seem to trip over his tongue. You want to talk about unforced errors. There have been a ton of them by Donald Trump. And I think Trump doesn't know how to deal with her. Trump is a bully. Trump is somebody who is accustomed to steamrolling over people. And the fact that Harris hasn't really given him the kind of give that he's used to, the fact that she's probably going to punch him in the mouth, figuratively, but I don't know. The fact that there's some fight in this dog, this is a good thing. Also, talk about Trump's past. There's a record there. And the thing is, I've been talking to a couple people here so far at this convention, and that's what they keep bringing up. Look, we remember the 4 years of chaos. We remember the 4 years of bad policy. We remember the 4 years of edicts via tweet. We remember how chaotic, how painful, and ultimately how badly screwed up the pandemic. And then compare that with what Biden had done. Got us out of the pandemic, did all of the things that we needed to get done to restart our economy, to make sure that people didn't fall through the cracks, and did it better than anyone in the world. And this is the thing that our corporate-controlled mainstream media is not telling us. The fact of the matter is, coming out of the pandemic, we have done better than any country in the world. Problem is, we've got a corporate-controlled media who, well, if it bleeds, it leads. If it hurts, it sells. I think coming out of this convention, you've got to talk about those successes and how Harris and Walz are going to build upon that and reinforce the message that we're not going back. We're not going back to the Trump years. We're not going back to the bad neoliberal policies. We're going to continue investing in our infrastructure, investing in manufacturing, investing in our future and our kids and healthcare. There's fertile ground for how we're going to move this country forward and how we're going to make lives better. And this week, we're going to hear a lot from labor leaders, not just one labor leader who's going to come and give a fiery speech because I'm going to tell them, but from people who are going to tell the stories of how the policies of this administration, the Biden-Harris administration and the Harris-Walz administration will make lives better by giving people the ability to bargain for better wages, hours, conditions. And for me, this is an exciting moment. It's almost like when I was a kid. You know, I still remember that family that lived next door to us where they got that union job and their lives got better. That's the story of America, and that should be the story coming out of this convention, that we're going to invest, we're going to have smart policy, sound investment, and we're going to make lives better. All we keep hearing out of Trump and the MAGA and the red hat crowd is anger and slamming their fist on the table and rambling, lots of rambling. In fact, I got a kick out of Trump saying, what was it, something like, they'll say I've been rambling. You know, I don't ramble. I'm the smartest guy ever. I don't ramble. I'm smart. I'm really smart. I don't ramble. You're rambling. For me, Trump used to be entertaining. There used to be some bit of entertainment in his craziness, in his rants. And now it's just weird and showing that he doesn't understand. For instance, he talked about in one of his speeches that a tariff is a tax on foreign corporations and a tax on foreign governments. I'm sorry, tax on foreign governments. We're taxing those governments. No, you're taxing the companies and the corporations who are bringing those products in, and we're leveling the playing field. My problem is I'm not going to knee-jerk react and say, no, I'm against tariffs. I'm against what Trump thinks our tariffs and what he thinks he's going to do with them. I think we have to be honest as a country. You know, what kind of a trade deals do we want with the rest of the world? And for me, the fact that we should be protecting our borders. We should be protecting them, not just from horrible fear, we fear people, but from the profit motive folks, our Chamber of Commerce types, you know, the ones who have been the pipeline of employment out of this country so that they can fatten their bottom line while paying very little in taxes. Maybe we should have that conversation. But Trump threw this out there, and it made me think that this is a great opportunity to talk about what tariffs could do in helping to reshore manufacturing. Because I'm old enough to remember a time where the majority of stuff that we consumed was made here in the U.S., which tells me we can do this. We can. It may cost a penny or two more, but that is going to work itself out with better wages, better hours, better conditions, better job opportunities, and it may alleviate some of our other problems as well. A good problem to have, a good position to find yourself if you have the right policies. Anytime Trump talks about policy, it's always, well, not even really an inch deep. There's nothing behind the rhetoric. There's nothing behind the talking point that most of the time he just throws out because, again, he was defending himself over something stupid he said, where, you know, I give these speeches and, you know, I give people what they want. I talk for a long time. So he's just basically going through a verbal kind of, well, diarrhea of the mouth is what he suffers from. And he's just blathering and rambling. And what's happened is Kamala Harris is in his head. Kamala's right there between the ears, and he has no idea how to deal with it. So what we're seeing is somebody who's quite desperate, reaching and saying dumb things for no real sane reason. And if there's a military person around that would vote for this guy after last Thursday's comments about the Congressional Medal of Honor being somehow lesser than the Medal of Freedom, because how did the logic go? The Medal of Freedom is better because the people aren't all shot up and or dead. It's again one of those things where you continue to add past comments, you have the suckers and losers, you add past positions, and you go, I don't think this guy really supports anyone other than this guy. My union friends, he came out effusive with praise for Elon Musk for firing striking workers. He is alienating group after group after group. And the sad reality is, I understand, the people who bought the hat, they're wearing the shirt, they're flying the flags, a lot of those coming down, they're in. Doesn't matter what he says, they're in. But for all of the other folks who are out there going, hey, wait a second, no, the Congressional Medal of Honor is the highest award in this land, and unquestionably so. I'm hoping it makes people reevaluate where they are. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. We will be here in Chicago the entire week here at the DNC convention. I'm told lots of interesting people, potentially, possibly, maybe a couple of blasts from the past that I'm excited about. But as the days tick by, we will find that. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Tell me what you think of our coverage and maybe some policy ideas that we can pass along. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Randy Weingarten from the American Federation of Teachers is going to be here to share some thoughts on Project 2025, the assaults on public education, and, well, you know, maybe what the Biden legacy is going to look like to, you know, teachers like her, maybe a couple of generations from now. Quick break, right back.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So education is going to be a big story here at the convention. I got to assume it is the bedrock of everything that we hold dear in this country. Well-informed, active, engaged citizens, capable of critical thinking. Oh, please tell me that that's something we can get to. And here to share some thoughts on how we get to that place, I've asked our good friend Randy Weingarten to come share some thoughts. Randy is the president of AFT, the American Federation of Teachers. Randy, thanks for taking time for us.
It's always great to be with you, Rick.
So what do you think of the affair here?
You know, it's, first off, I'm a convention junkie. I watch the Republican conventions. I've been at every Democratic convention, I guess, except for 2020, since 1992. I've been a delegate since 1992. And they are about history. And this one will be history-making in so many different ways. But, you know, what... So, you know, I... There are very few times that regular folks can actually be engaged in making consequential decisions like this. Voting is one of those times. Conventions are another one of those times. And so, you know, I think that this moment of kind of thinking about the convention and what it means and the contrast between the other party, it's really consequential. So as a civics junkie and as an, you know, look, a teacher is a teacher is a teacher. As an AP Gov teacher, you know, this is, my geekiness is showing up today. So that's what I think
as
about
this.
That's what I think about just being at a convention. Having said that, there's a lot. This is going to be hugely consequential. It's hugely consequential in terms of, well, let me say it this way. You started the intro with, you know, how education is, you know, a pillar of opportunity, what we should be doing, helping critical thinking. That should be a value statement that is bipartisan, that everyone believes in. In a capitalist democracy, public education is pretty much one of the only opportunity agents we give all children. And yet, what has happened is, in terms of these two parties, there is a huge gulf. The Trump Republican Party doesn't believe in public education. It's not simply that they want to get rid of the Department of Education as part of Project 2025. One of the few pieces of Project 2025 that Trump still says he embraces. But they don't actually, they don't actually care, or maybe they're afraid of kids thinking and critical thinking and engaging in one's future and in thinking about honest history. I mean, they ban books. They censor history. They don't let teachers actually meet the needs of kids. They want to get rid of feeding programs. They want to get rid of Title I. They want to get rid of the help for IDEA. I mean, what are they about?
Cheap labor.
You know, it is, and yes, and they want to actually, you know, get rid of child labor laws. I mean, it is crazy. It's like going back 100 years to the Gilded Age, when only the rich could have access to education. It's really mind-boggling for this school teacher to try to understand why they're doing it. It's like, I don't even understand why they're doing
it. Well, I think you just said why they're doing it. It's what I've been saying. They want to repeal the 20th century. So they want to move us back to those days where if you're hungry enough, desperate enough to work in deplorable conditions for poverty wages, that's your right, your freedom, your liberty. And they're going to create that by taking that one ladder away of education. Because you hit it on the head. They're ruining, destroying public education, and they're destroying child labor laws. So we're going to make those kids who are a lot of poor kids, we're going to make them desperate enough to have to go into the workforce and compete with mom and dad. That's their dream scenario.
And then on top of it, you know, I mean, look, Trump and Musk in that, whatever that was last week, when Trump was just kind of lauding Musk over firing workers and firing strikers. And then he says to workers, oh, trust me? Like, how do you trust somebody who's not letting us collectively bargain? How do you trust somebody who wants to get rid of labor laws that help people have the clout to have higher wages? How do you trust somebody who doesn't want to have, you know, health care for all?
I think you hit the point there for all. What they've done the master of is the individual. Hooray for me and the heck with everybody else.
But
as long as I get mine, I don't care about you.
But it's not every individual. It's only certain individuals. Well, because other individuals, they don't want us to have a ladder of opportunity. That goes back to education.
Right.
So they don't want, if you believe in individual freedom, then you want to make sure that people have the access to make those choices and decisions, and they're not giving kids that access. I mean, J.D. Vance basically not even knowing the difference between pre-K and childcare. I think childcare is really important, and I think we should be, you know, we have to make it affordable. But you don't know the difference? You don't know what happens when kids actually go to pre-K programs, how much more prepared they are for school, how if we can actually help kids when their mind is so supple to actually grow their minds and grow their bodies and have the kind of mental well-being. So I understand it cerebrally. Like, I understand what they're doing, but I do not understand it emotionally, and I really don't understand it morally.
No, I'm with you.
If you care about kids, you have to care about public education. And frankly, that used to be a bipartisan issue. But in this moment of this huge divergence and division, all they seem to care about is rich folk.
No, and then the hope of I'm going to be a rich person. But it's interesting you brought up J.D. Vance in childcare, because not all of us have a PhD mother-in-law who can take a year sabbatical to come take care of our children. So a lot of working families, since we've, as a society, been forced to two, right now I'd argue three incomes to survive, there needs to be some help. There needs to be some policy that helps working families get through some of this.
How working families, you know, one of the things in America that unites us is a hope for a better future, and that our kids will have a better future and our grandkids will have a better future than we have, and that we build towards a better future for our kids and our grandkids. So when people who have take that ladder of opportunity away from people who don't, it's disgusting.
No, I'm right there with you. So in looking at that Project 2025 thing, the Trump plan, obviously destroy labor rights, obviously destroy education, obviously repeal the 20th century. We know this on one side. So what's the Harris Walls plan? What's the 2024 plan?
So,
other than what Biden said, we're going to whip the hell out of them.
So this is what I think is really, this is what I think we're going to see this week, because, you know, elections are always about contrasts, and I think it's pretty clear.
Stark
contrast. The contrast between, I think it's really clear what Trump represents in terms of the authoritarian impulse, the anti-democracy impulse. Just look at what's going on in Hungary, the otherizing, the undermining of opportunity, the taking away freedoms like reproductive health or the freedom to read or the freedom to learn or the freedom to join a union. I think that has become obvious, and Project 2025 is the perfect example of that. I think what we're going to see this week is far more about what Harris and Waltz wants to do to create opportunity in America, to create broad-based freedom in America, to bring back that sense of the promise of America. And frankly, what Joe Biden had to do was he inherited on January 20th, 2021, a country that had just gone through a failed coup, a country whose, you know, where COVID had shattered us, where the unemployment was huge, where the supply chains were broken. And step by step, he recreated an economy where we not only had have a soft landing, a better landing than any other economy in the world, but created the foundation for growth, economic growth in America. So I think what we're going to see is a Harris-Walz administration that is about growth of our economy and making it fairer. And that economic dream, which is the anchor to American, the promise of America, to recreating a viable middle class in America, is really important. And so we're going to see that not only the why Trump is bad, but what we need to do in terms of a hopeful, joyous future. So it's not just that Trump is about the past. It's not just that trying to recreate the 20th or the 19th century, but it's also he's about himself and his friends, not about all of America.
No, it's a good point.
And he's about the otherizing of the parts of America that he doesn't like, and he is about the creation of that kind of hate and division as opposed to solving our problems and lifting all boats.
So last line of questioning I've got for you, because as a history, civics teacher, as an educator, you know, how do you think history is going to remember Joe Biden and this moment? Because, look, a major sacrifice stepping aside, allowing Kamala Harris to come to the forefront and help in pushing her forward. How do you think history is going to remember that? And then out of this, you know, the policies that might come out of that as well.
I hope history remembers Joe Biden as one of the most transformative, consequential presidents of our time, including the decision he made to step aside to save democracy. I'm hoping that is what history remembers him as. That his policies, I mean, look, when there are so many consequential people in history who are never understood at the moment that they are acting. And so, but if you look at Biden's policies, step by step, take the American Rescue Plan, take the child tax credit that was about it, take all of the money for education that was in it so we didn't have to face recessionary forces. We could face how do we help kids succeed? How do we help kids survive? How do we help kids recover? The same in terms of the economy. And if you take these things and you see what he did to basically get people out of COVID, to get the vaccines in arms, to get our economy moving again, to fix the supply chains, to actually now arrest inflation. That is his brilliance. But in addition to that, it was creating an industrial policy so America manufactures again, so we have chips manufacturing again, so we're rebuilding our electrical grids, so that we are rebuilding our bridges, so that we are actually seeing ourselves as that muscular, compassionate country that we want to be. He created the foundation for that. Now we want and need Harris and Waltz to build the house and build that future.
Yeah, no, I think I love Kamala Harris, but Tim Walz, I don't know where they created him, which Petri dish.
He's
but
amazing.
For me, the Democrat I've been trying to create for 19 years
and guess
doing
what?
This show.
He's not. He has been there for any of us who have known him for years. That's why it is so great that he's been the governor of Minnesota. So he can show the record that we have seen from him as a teacher, as a coach, as a congressman, and now as a governor. And with every passing moment, he doesn't just give teachers pride. When he says things like, I can handle the Senate leading this, I can handle presiding of the Senate because, you know, I did lunch duty for 30 years. Any parent, any kid, and any teacher understands exactly what that means.
No, I say it all the time. I got 3 kids. I can't handle them. I can't imagine having 30 or 40 or even more in a classroom. So good on him. Randy, as always, I appreciate you taking a little time for us. Good seeing you again.
You too. Take care, Rick.
Thanks so much, our good friend Randy Weingarten. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Back here from Chicago. Stick around.
This is The Shaw, WAUK. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. A few showers and thunderstorms around this evening, otherwise mostly cloudy tonight and lows in the mid-50s. For tomorrow, a return to a mostly sunny sky and a high in the mid-70s. And it stays in the mid-70s for Thursday and Friday, more sun than clouds. Right now it's 58.
Today's WAUK Big Deal of the Day. 50% savings at Beyond the Board in Brookfield. This board game cafe is the perfect place to relax and recharge, offering a wide selection of new and classic board games. Indulge in delicious pizzas, subs, salads, and adult beverages for those 21 and older. You and your friends will have a great time at Beyond the Board. They make all the right moves. Go to WAUKradio.com, click on the Big Deals tab, and purchase $25 of gift certificates for just $12.50. Today only at WAUK Big Deals.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I got to tell you, loving the time here at the Democratic Convention. The people you run into, the people you talk to, people you respect, admire, all of that. One of those folks, Stephanie Miller, host of the Stephanie Miller Show, in a lot of the places that you find us, Free Speech TV, WCPT, a whole bunch of places across the country. That's why I'm so thrilled that Stephanie decided to step by. Stephanie, thanks for taking time for us.
Hi, Rick. Can I have more volume in my headphones? I've been in radio for 11 billion years. There you go. Okay. Yeah. Now that's too much. Okay. yeah, this is unbelievably exciting. It's just everyone keeps using the word joy, but it's really true. There's like this joyful energy and just optimism and...
The hope and change stuff.
Yeah, that hopey changey stuff still works, I guess.
No, well, you needed it. Because look, I mean, the sad reality is as much as I love Joe Biden, that energy weren't getting it.
Although, you know what? I got to say, Rick, I think part of what's driving this, there's a lot of elements, but part of it is love for Joe Biden. And, you know, the way he endorsed Kamala Harris and the obvious organic kind of love and warmth they have for
history
each other.
History will remember him kindly.
The most selfless patriotic act I think we've ever seen, Rick. And I'm telling you, there's not going to be a dry eye in the House tonight when President Biden, you know, can you imagine when Kamala Harris comes out? I'm sure at the end of his speech is just, it's going to be amazing.
So
and
given
also,
that.
And
given...
also, I got to say, Hillary Clinton talking tonight, there's a lot of us women that are going to die mad about 2016, Rick. So there's some of that energy.
I think her speech should be, she walks up there, everybody applauds. She just says, I was right. And she leaves.
I effing told y'all I was right about everything.
Exactly. I mean, I think that's the message right there because I don't know if you saw Trump over the weekend, but wow.
Wow.
I mean, at this point, wow is the only, I just, wow.
I don't, that can encompass so many things. Him saying he's better looking than Kamala. I don't know. Which delusion are you speaking of?
Well, I mean, I got an interesting email today from a place that, they're selling footlong hot dogs. Here in Chicago, there it's the place called the Wiener's Circle.
Okay.
They're selling foot-long hot dogs. Mm-hmm. They're actually 3 inches long to commemorate what they say, a nod to convicted felon Donald Trump's history of exaggerating the size of his crowds.
Tiny
crowds.
Cheeto. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were doing a penis joke. I'm sorry. I went there.
I think that's where they were going as well. When the Wiener Circle is putting out a 3-inch foot long, either you're getting cheated on. Well, you probably know more about that than I would.
Please, so. I'm gonna have to hear about his tiny mushroom penis when we get to the sentencing for the hush money trial in September. So please, I'm trying to keep my breakfast down.
But you know, the thing is we've gotten to a point where you look at a lot of Republican voters that I've talked to. It's, well, we're not voting for him anymore.
Right.
Before it was this cultish kind of, you know, he's the savior. Now it's kind of like, well, we bought the hat.
It's like an old moldy vaudeville act now that just isn't working anymore. I mean, and people I think are just tired of the hate and the insults and the divisiveness and fear mongering. And it feels like it's just falling flat. I mean, and they can say all they want that, you know, Kamala and Tim's crowds are AI, but, you know, it's like, I think that's what's hard, Rick, is he's not running a campaign based in any kind of reality. You know, the fact is Biden-Harris saved the economy from Donald Trump. You know, you can't, like, try to or go, oh, none of her crowds exist. I mean, he's not running on anything that's actually true.
Yeah. I mean, I just,
that.
I'm going, yeah, but why is it different in 2016 and 2020 to now, though? It's the same tired, boring shtick. It's a lot more desperate. Yeah. I mean, you get the desperation coming out of him.
Yeah.
But what's the difference, do you think, that the Republican Party hasn't just completely walked away from him?
Yeah.
I mean,
we comedians call it flop sweat, right?
Okay.
It's like flop set sweat. It's yuck yucks at 2 a.m. when your set is just.
So when he's comparing the Congressional Medal of Honor to the civilian medal and saying that the one that civilians get is much better, and then rambling on and digging himself deeper and deeper. Is that what you mean?
Yes, it's hard to believe. I think maybe the Trump Vance campaign is working for us. I'm not really even certain. It is the worst campaign I've ever seen. If they could more surgically alienate more groups of people, I don't think you could. I mean, I think J.D. Vance is going to go door to door just calling every woman in America a whore. And like,
Jezebel!
I don't know. And also your mother. Your mother's also a whore. Thank you. I'm J.D. Vance. Like, I don't know what else. They're just, every time you think that, like, they've hit a low, you're like, oh, my God, what? He said what?
Don't put your feet on the couch.
I do. Ew. And that's the least weird thing, is the couch effing.
Did you see the drag pictures? Have you seen those?
Yes, of course, because, of course, this election cycle. I mean, this election cycle, Rick, like Kristi Noem's like, I shot a puppy in the face, and Bobby Kennedy Jr. is like, hold my bear. You're just like, is this election cycle on acid? I mean, are they actually carrying around little cups that's supposed to be J.D. Vance, you know, man batter? Is that, I don't even get what the joke is. Is something J.D. Vance family planning kit or something? Is it an IVF joke? What is it, Rick?
You know, they used to be fun, at least a little fun. You know, I talk about this all the time. Like when Michelle Bachmann was around, I loved Crazy Michelle
because
she was fun. I mean, she was crazy, kooky as all could be.
With her big, obviously gay husband?
Yes.
Yeah.
Running the conversion place.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
But there was some fun there. There was, you know, some entertainment value.
Yeah.
These folks are just plain mean.
Yeah,
and
weird. And seriously weird.
That's they've always been weird, but they're just mean. And this idea that they're going to change the country in a way that has never been.
Yeah.
It's this fantasy kind of Handmaid's Tale thing.
Well, you know, we always joke. We always talk on my show about alpha liberals. That, you know, liberals got to learn how to fight. And the Harris-Waltz campaign is doing it perfectly.
Yep.
They're doing it joyfully, with humor, with intelligence. But they're fighting. Whoever's writing her press releases and social media is just like, bam.
Yeah.
You know, they just projected on Trump Tower last night, you know, Project 2025 headquarters. And Trump Vance weird. Like, I mean, it's just, they're really But you're right.
I don't
think
Kamala
not mean,
and Tim were out there. I don't think Tim and Kamala were out there doing that. There were
some
people.
Her campaign is just pitch perfect so far.
But you brought up Tim Walz. I mean, here's a guy that I don't think, from my perspective, as a working class liberal living in a rural area in central Pennsylvania, you could not have created a more perfect Democrat for me.
I know, like in a laboratory.
He's the guy that I've been talking about for all 19 years of doing this show. I've often argued that Democrats in a street fight will offer to hold your coat.
Yes, exactly.
This is a guy who I think would hold your coat long enough to throw it on the ground.
he's magic. He is magic. I mean, it's we were saying, like, I hadn't really heard of him before this, and he just is the perfect compliment to her. And
I had talked about him a bunch because of the labor stuff he does, because we focus a lot on labor issues.
Yeah.
So I love the fact that here's a guy who was a teacher, you know, union member, has been out on the picket lines, found Obama's comfortable shoes. He was, for me, the dream Democrat who can talk to rural voters. Because sadly, most liberals don't know how to do that.
And their first attack on him was trying to call him a San Francisco liberal. I'm like, he's never even been there till like last week, you know. So, no, I think you're absolutely right. Like Kamala Harris talking about working at McDonald's. Talk about relatable to working people and to most people. I mean, I heard that. I'm like, Trump is McF'd. I think a McFlurry of voters is going toward Kamala Harris.
Well, that's the hope. I mean, the only way you're going to get rid of MAGA, the only way you're going to put this craziness back in the box is by a real thumping at the polls.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. And I'm glad she yesterday was saying that she's running as the underdog. And, you know, Coach Waltz is saying we can sleep when we're dead, pedal to the metal, because we all don't trust the polls. Like, I saw the latest one. She's up by 6. But I'm like, we saw the Hillary polls. I mean, we just have to keep our eyes on the prize. I'm glad she hired Mark Elias, because I know we're worried about, you know, Republican effery, because that seems to be the only way they think they can win is by cheating. But
then claiming the other side cheated.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, all we can do is just vote, turn out. And, you know, what do they say? Numbers, you know, too big to rig, too real to steal.
Yep. No, and that's the hope. And the fact that Florida's in play for me is like.
I know. Oh, my God. But everywhere. Arizona, Georgia. I mean, I feel like all things could be possible if we just do our work. You know.
Now, what is she going to have to do between now and Election Day? Because obviously she got the huge bump because Biden did what I said historically would be the right thing. This convention, she's probably going to get a little bit more of a bump.
Yeah.
Between now and Election Day, what's she going to have to do here and then moving into the Election Day, what's she going to have to do?
Think about that she's going into the convention with a bump. But you know, so now we're going to have this amazing convention. Then we have a debate where she's going to wipe the floor with him if he even shows up. Yeah. And then we have sentencing, and reminding people that he's a convicted felon, you know. I keep my fantasy is just that he's going to get to play the role of his beloved Hannibal Lecter. Like, he'll actually go to prison, and then the first debate he'll have to be, you know, behind, like, glass with a mask on. She'll be like, I can hear Trump's screaming. He's screaming. I wish he'd be silent like the lambs.
He's never going to jail.
Rick, don't harsh my buzz, man. Don't C-block me.
He's never going to jail.
I don't know that's true.
He may be sitting in one of his penthouses, but I don't see him at Rikers. What was his name, Weaselberg?
don't threaten me with a good time. You just you saying that, I drifted to another plane somewhere. Trump in jail. I think if we vote, you know, and he is not able to make all of these go away, I do believe he's going to end up in prison. But, you know, we got to make that happen, right?
No, the first thing is make
sure. Lock him up. I don't have Kamala Harris's class. I'm not going to stop. I'm going to start the chants. Lock him up.
Well, no, I mean, this is the problem with Democrats. They have class.
Yeah.
You know, I remember the whole.
I'm not burdened with that, by the way.
I remember the whole, was it 2016, the whole when they go, hello, we do something else.
Right. I'm like, no. We go to the basement.
Anybody who's ever played football knows when they go low, you smash their face into the ground so they don't do it again.
And we have such a great bench of Democrats that are doing that. Jasmine Crockett and Jared Moskowitz and, you know, Eric Swalwell. There's a lot of Democrats now that are, like, keep saying, are alpha liberals that know how to fight. And I feel like, you know, are doing it with again, humor, intelligence.
Now you've said that alpha liberal thing a couple of times. Now, my conservative friends say the word alpha has been banned on the left.
Well, I guess not. Guess not. Suck it, MAGA.
Yeah. There you go. Well, that's a start. So Biden's going to speak on Monday. What are we expecting?
Tonight, yeah. I know. Very exciting. I think, like I said, not a dry eye in the House. I think there is such enormous, you know, goodwill for Joe Biden and for this really selfless act of patriotism.
Yeah.
And also just the obvious, you know, they're saying that he's clearly, you know, I think he has said he knows he made the right decision, but it was not easy. But I think he is very... the reporting is he's very aware that Kamala Harris was not any part of the pushing him out. She was loyal. I think he has appreciated her loyalty to him, and that's why he is. And I'm sure, Rick, he didn't get out until he got assurances that it's Kamala.
Right.
Because, you know, we're not doing this cluster F, mini primary, open convention chaos. He knows history well enough to know that would have been a disaster. And if we skipped over the first sitting black woman vice president.
No, there was no way it wasn't going to be her. And he made the right choice when he came out, full-throated endorsement.
Yeah, when they say a coup, Rick, that's BS. Because, like, what happened, unfortunately, they're not used to seeing Democrats in array like this. Because what happened is she did get all the votes. They just did it really quickly. She got all the delegates within, like, 24, 48 hours of Joe Biden endorsing her. So it wasn't a coup. It wasn't a, you know, by the way, the delegates didn't have to do that just because Joe Biden endorsed her, right?
No, you're spot on right. It's just one of those moments where we go, we're going to see. I'm excited about November. I was a little down before. Now, this is good stuff. But, Stephanie, I appreciate you sharing some time with us.
My producer's here, so we're going to the Billy Goat Tavern to start drinking now.
There you go.
Because, yeah, we've been on the air since, you know, ass o'clock this morning. So,
well, happy hangover.
Thank you, Rick. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. Good talking with you. Stephanie Miller, host of The Stephanie Miller Show. Going to take a quick break back here from Chicago. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Right back. Stick around.
Divided we beg. Rick Smith.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1909. That was the day that a committee of the Industrial Workers of the World in Spokane, Washington, published the first edition of the Little Red Songbook. The collection were songs to fan the flames of discontent. Perhaps more than any other labor organization in the United States, members of the IWW understood the power of art to tell the workers' stories. IWW members created music, visual art, and writing to draw people to the cause of labor and to build solidarity among workers. Richard Brazier was an IWW musician who served on the Spokane committee that compiled the collection. He explained, "What first attracted me to the IWW was its songs and the gusto with which its members sang them. Such singing, I thought, was good propaganda, since it had originally attracted me, and many others as well, and also useful, since it held the crowd for wobbly speakers who followed." The original Little Red Songbook included songs such as Solidarity Forever and the French song The Internationale. 30 editions of the pocket-sized book were published between 1909 and 1995. They have included labor songs from musicians such as Joe Hill, Ralph Chaplin, and T-Bone Slim. John Reed, a former IWW journalist, reflected on the organization's powerful connection to music. He wrote, "Remember, this is the only American working-class movement which sang. Tremble then at the IWW, for a singing movement is not to be beaten." Do you have a favorite labor song?
Solidarity forever.
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Solidarity forever, for the union makes us strong.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, therickSmithShow.com. I got to tell you, one of the things I love about Randy Weingarten, she gets it. She gets all the pieces, puts them together, understands it, and then, as an educator, as the kind of educator we want for the nation, lays it out in very clear, concise, stark terms. I mean, this election really is a no-brainer for working people. The issues are right out in front, and, well, the differences couldn't be greater than we see right now. But a great first day here at the Democratic National Convention. I wanted to reach out to my producer, the wizard, the professor, to help share some thoughts on this. Brett, thanks for taking a little time.
Hey, always happy to be on this side of the camera for once.
This has been an incredible day, I got to tell you. We've run into a whole bunch of dignitaries, you know, all kinds of folks who were going to get on the show.
Right.
This is kind of a celebration of the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. One thing I've noticed from this particular convention is that there's a tremendous amount of energy in the room. You know, everybody's excited. Everybody's fired up. Nobody's walking around with their head down. Everybody is, you know, is up. Faces are bright. Lots of smiles. Everyone seems to be really happy to be here. And there's just a sense of energy in the room.
No, this is a snapshot of America. I mean, the reality is everybody is represented here, except for, as one of the other show hosts pointed out, no weird, bizarre trifold hats, no women walking around with shirts saying, grab me by the you-know-what.
Right.
None of the craziness that we saw at the RNC, which no things on the ears.
Yeah, I was going to mention the giant gauze pads on the ears that we saw all over the RNC. Pretty sure we're not going to see any of that in the crowd tonight.
No, but over the next couple of days, what are we looking for? What do you think? Obviously, you know, they're going to make a big presentation about President Biden, who, as you know, I talked with Randy Weingarten about, was saying, look, this guy, history is going to smile on. Mm-hmm. But taking what he's done and moving that forward, what do you think we're going to see?
Well, I think you just said it. I think this idea of kind of, rather than, you know, a new start or a new beginning or something, it's about picking up what's been done well and taking it the next, you know, the next 10 yards, the next 20 yards, you know, however long it takes to get it in the end zone. But I think that's what we're going to see. I think we're going to see a tribute to Joe Biden and all the work that he's done. And then I think we're going to hear a lot from organized labor, especially early on in the convention. I think Monday night's going to be all about, you know, going to be all about labor speakers and so on. And it you know, it should be good. This idea that the working class in middle America is not only where you win elections, but it's where you move the country forward. So I think that focus is going to be there throughout the convention, and I'm looking forward to seeing it.
No, I mean, the positivity that we've seen so far getting here, even the people who are doing the searching of our stuff, all of the security people have been incredible. You know, I've been to these before. That energy, that feel, even down to the people who really aren't going to vote for her, it was just great.
Yeah, and I noticed that even in the lines while we're waiting to get, you know, to get bags checked or things, some of them were long lines. It's not, you know, it's not cool out there. It's kind of hot. You know what I mean? And even the people waiting in these long lines don't seem to have much of a problem. Being, they understand that it's important and that they're waiting for a good reason, and people chatting each other up in line. Again, the entire kind of vibe of the entire convention is about that positive energy, and it seems to be going on before you even walk in the door.
No, it's infectious. And look, as someone who is not the most joyful person, that seems to be the theme that they're saying. You know, it's like the hope and change, only, you know, joy and change, or joy in moving forward. I'm hoping coming out of this, that message is there. But more importantly, you know, as someone who's been to these over the years, this is the first time I really feel that the people here do care about workers' issues. There have always been some lip service being paid here or there. I do believe Harris Walz, I believe that ticket, that campaign really is about making lives better.
Yeah, and so do I. And, you know, I think that the addition of Tim Walz to the ticket was, you know, was really a major predictor of what kind of what the campaign's going to be about and what the issues that they're going to focus on are going to be, because he's very clear about what he's done in his state, you know, with some of the programs and some of the things that he's passed, and kind of turning those successes into national successes seems to be a big part of where we're going.
No, it's going to be an interesting several days. Most exciting thing you're looking forward to?
Well, somebody, I think Bernie's running around here somewhere. I'd like to grab him, put him in the chair, see if we can't get him on the air for a little bit. Look forward to meeting him. And again, there's just gonna be so many people in the room. You know, it's hard to pick. You know, it's hard to pick just one. But you know, if I do my job well enough, I'll be able to put Bernie in the chair at some point this week.
So I can go, where you been?
Exactly.
Because for those who don't know, Bernie Sanders was the first person I ever interviewed. And when I started this show 19 years ago, he was the very first person I got to interview. And it was one of those moments that you go, you know, wow, I can't believe I get to do this. So, you know, it's interestingly enough to have the opportunity to pull that through. I got to tell you, is kind of exciting.
Yeah, it's the same for me too. Even with, you know, with what I do here with the show, more things are behind the scenes, but you know, coordinating with the different folks on these different teams, and you know, trying to get this person over here and that person over there, and just, you know, with all this excitement, everyone wanting to be everywhere all at once, you know, it's been a good time. It's really busy. It's not the easiest thing in the world to get done, but it's been a great time.
I want to get some of your thoughts on, because you know, one of the things I said at the beginning is, out of this, you're going to have to, one, sustain the energy.
Right.
You're going to have to continue on the message of we're going to make lives better. This idea of transformational change that, you know, has happened during the Biden years. But also that stark difference between, you know, Harris and Walz and, well, Trump and the other guy.
Right.
I keep thinking Tim Couch. I'm not sure why. But, you know, it's that's got to be front and center, especially given the fact that Trump really, I think, recently just stepped in a giant pile of unforced error with this comparison between the Congressional Medal of Honor and the Medal of Freedom, which I gotta think, if you're a veteran, that's gotta sting.
Yeah, it really does. And again, it's one of those things where, and all these errors are unforced. You know, I mean, everyone can have a gaffe every now and again, or say something that they meant one thing and it's interpreted in another way and so on. These things are all possible and they happen to people all the time. Trump seems to double down on it every time he does it. Every time he does it, someone says, hey, maybe you should think about that.
Yeah.
He's like, nope, that's what I said, that's what I meant. And I'm sure there are people out there who think that's just great. But at the end of the day, what we're really seeing here between these two conventions is a clear contrast. And again, people who operate behind the scenes in politics, they always want to create a contrast between them and their opponents. You're going to see that pretty clearly this week. The RNC and the DNC are going to be entirely different animals. And again, we're going to see that in the very near future.
And the question, I guess, that comes out of it with, because I think you're absolutely right. I think as this convention goes on, this is going to be a very positive convention. It's going to be a lot of energy, and I think it will be well-received throughout the country, as opposed to what we saw from the Republicans, which was kind of boring, a lot of grievance, and no bump whatsoever.
Right.
I'm expecting a reasonable bump coming out of this. I expect, you know, the polls to put Harris even further ahead. Are you in the same camp?
Yeah, pretty much. I think when it comes to the kind of the RNC and Republican messaging, I think what we've noticed, not just during the convention or during, you know, the campaign, but for the past several years, is there's been nothing new. It's been anger and grievance and then more anger and then more grievance. And it's just been like that. It's been like that for years now. And I think what we're seeing in terms of the numbers shifting, it comes from both sides. On the left, you have this energy and this excitement and this, you know, this desire to make positive change going forward. And then on the right, what you have is people getting tired of the same old thing, what they've heard over and over again, the anger, the grievance, and all of this stuff. I think people are just, they're just weary of it. And I think they're looking for something different. And, you know, the Harris-Walz campaign is coming along with something different at what could possibly be the perfect time.
No, this is exciting stuff, joyful stuff. That seems to be the word. Are we going to get tired of joyful?
I think we're going to get tired of joyful, yes.
But, Brett, I appreciate it. If you do your job right, we will have more great guests. Thank you for all the work that you do. This is going to be a great week. Thank you.
Thanks.
Now, look, you know, we're going to spend the next couple of days bringing you folks who are, well, the movers, the shakers, the important folks who are going to make lives better. And as I said, for me coming out of this convention, the hope is that message gets through loud and clear. As I said earlier, this is the first convention I've been to where labor and working class issues, I truly believe, aren't just getting lip service, that there's actual movement, that there's actual want to make change and to do things in the right direction. And that should excite even my red hat friends who their lives, whether they like it or not, their lives are going to get better too. And that's the America I think we want. So day one here, great success. I want to hear your thoughts of what we've talked about so far. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Got any thoughts, questions, comments? You know where to send the email. Angry ones to the top of the list. As always, you miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. You know where that is. And also check out Free Speech, freespeech.org, the website for all of that. As always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time right here at the United Center in Chicago. Thanks for being here.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@therickSmithShow.com.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.